You guys know this is an exciting time of year to improve our roster. What gives me confidence and excitement right now is really all the prep that's gone into this. You know, it's been a year-long process, and our coaches and scouts, I want to stress the work that we've done together. And together is the word for the process through this whole time. Our directors, Josh Lucas, Joe Douglas, Champ Kelly, really this whole offseason have been outstanding in our preparation as we acquire more talent. This is a time, this is one of those moments where I know you guys got a lot of questions, and it's one of those ones where this is one of the more difficult times for me to talk as close as we are to the draft. And I hope you respect that. It's just, you know, things are at a sensitive nature right now. But I'd be happy to answer any questions you have, and we'll knock this out.
Brian, philosophically, when there's a position in the draft that's significantly deep, how do you personally sort of weigh the luxury of waiting on that position versus wanting to grab from the top?
And we talk about it, but I think if there's a player that's special enough, even if it is a deep position, if he's special enough and he's an impact player, we'll go ahead and pull the trigger on him, even if it's a deep position.
You know, last year you discussed how many guys you're kind of targeting at a certain spot. As you look at that 11 picker, is it 5 guys, 7 guys, 8 guys? You know, how comfortable you'd be with picking a certain guy?
We have more than 11 names right now that we're prepared to go with.
Ryan, how much does your board get thrown off by what apparently are moves being made to have quarterbacks go 1-2 tomorrow?
You know, we kind of projected that early. You know, that it's not surprising to me that could occur. So it doesn't really throw off our board. It kind of puts it right in line with what we expected.
Ryan, how do you balance put the best player available philosophy when there's a position that is deeper than other positions in the draft or even thinner than other positions in the draft?
You know, I just think if you have conviction on a player, and that's how our grades come out, you take best player available. I mean, I think you got to have convictions on our grades and where we've come. And I think you can overthink it a little bit if you get too caught up in that.
When you stack your board, is it each guy is on their individual line, or do you have sort of groups and clusters of guys that are similarly graded?
There's clusters. I mean, the board's stacked by position, and then there's clusters in each round. And then we also have a value line where it's stacked just 1 through 7 rounds, you know, all the positions mixed together.
How did your experience with Kevin White, or what happened with him after with the injury, affect your willingness to take a player who might have some, you know, injury concerns this year?
That's a good question. I think, you know, they're all case-by-case basis, you know, so we've had extensive medical discussions, and you kind of break each one of those down, and it's like, hey, is this a long-term injury that's going to be a condition that's going to really shorten his career, or is this something he's going to battle through and then be okay, like a Gurley last year, and then have a productive career? So those are all case-by-case decisions that we look at and we analyze very carefully.
When you guys went to a 34 last year, when John came in, was that with the idea it's probably going to take 2 years to get all the pieces we need to make that kind of
thing? It takes some time to tweak the roster to fit that scheme. But I think one thing, you know, John and Vic have both stressed is, hey, we're 3-4 base, but, hey, we're in sub 60% of the time now. So when that's happened and three receivers are on the field, a lot of times it's a four-man front. So some of these guys I think that you might want to write off as, hey, these are 4-3-3 techniques. Well, they can fit in sub packages in certain situations if they're good pass rushers. So
did you think Aaron Donald was too short when he came out?
If a player is of that height, they got to have special traits, and he has special traits.
Ryan, how does, when you're talking about best available and not reaching for need and so forth, how much of a factor, you say, let's say you have 8 guys still on the board, pick a number when your turn comes. At what point does need overcome a slight grading difference? In other words, would you pick a guy if they're close?
Yeah, Moon, if it's really close, man, and then we'll talk it out. It's really close. But we just got to be careful of, and I've said this before, I think it doesn't happen during the draft. It happens in the month leading into the draft, 2 months. You start saying, hey, we really need this position. And as you're discussing it with our scouts and coaches and you're putting final grades on guys, you're naturally, wrongfully, pulling those guys up too high. So, but I think at this point, if we've stacked our board correctly and they're all really close, then I think you can lean towards a need at that time.
Do you ever reach a point in the process where you feel like you overanalyze every prospect, or do you feel like they're still, boy, the draft's tomorrow, and I'm not prepared for this?
No, I think I think at this point you just got to just calm down and just and have confidence in the work that you've done. I mean, sometimes we can have up to 10 reports on one player. So, you know, sometimes there is a lot of noise, and then it's my job to kind of filter through that and take all that information, the personality test, the character, the medical, all the interviews, the workouts, and then make a decision, a final decision.
Ryan, when you guys are actually on the clock, how much discussion is there actually in the room at that point, or is all the work that you've done, it's pretty obvious who you're going to take at that point? Does that change by round?
It just depends if there's trade discussions. You know, I mean, you could be on the clock and there's trade discussions about going back, or teams are calling. So there's really not a lot of talk about the player that you're going to select. That's become pretty obvious. It's more about, hey, do we want to go back here? You know, those kind of questions. That'd be more the conversation occurring while you're on the clock.
Prior are talks about, I don't know if they're having, about maybe possibly moving up. How much do you consider maybe some of the financial benefits at being at number 11, just being outside the top 10?
Yeah, it weighs a little bit, but honestly, if you have conviction on a player, yeah, I think you got to go get them. You know, so.
All right, we haven't had a chance to talk to you since you made a couple offensive line signings. Specifically with Ted Larson, where do you envision him fitting?
You know, both Larson and Ramirez are veteran guys that have starting experience that can play guard and center, so it gives us flex inside. We were looking for that. So we're going to let it all sort out and battle out, but those guys are guard, center, kind of interior swing guys.
Is there a ripple effect for a guy like Matt Slauson, who also is kind of a guard center?
Yeah, our goal, and not just there but everywhere, was just to keep on increasing competition. If there's one word I could stress this offseason, it's competition. And we need to create better competition throughout our roster, and that was definitely a focus on the offensive line.
Ryan, positionally, where do you think this draft is deep?
That's those kind of questions, and I get that a lot. It's I just think it's too revealing, you know. And I'll tell you after the draft how I felt, but wouldn't want to comment on that.
But I think we've all heard, though, like how deep this defensive line class is. Is it comparable to talent maybe in the second round? Maybe middle of first round?
It's good. I mean, there's different pockets of rounds. Like, we might be looking at a position, and hey, man, there's a lot of quality fourth round guys at this position, you know, but there's not a lot up here in the first round, you know. So, this is a position I think if we're going to attack, I mean, there's some dudes in the third, fourth round that we feel really, really strong about at that value. So, if I visualize our draft boards, I can kind of see where those pockets of guys are. So, you know, well, there's a couple different options there. I mean, one of them's Nick Becton, who we feel good about, who's a good young player with a lot of upside. I had background in New Orleans with him, so just great length, kind of a raw player. But Becton's kind of our backup left tackle right now that can compete at that spot.
As guarded as you want to be with information and keeping your hand a little bit, what was your reaction when Ezekiel Elliott pointed out on a national radio show yesterday that the Bears are one of the teams that's been inspected a lot?
It didn't surprise me because of Stan Drayton. You know, Stan recruited him out of high school, so he's known him for a long time and has a relationship with the family, and I know how those two feel about each other, so it didn't really surprise me at all.
Ryan, can you give us an update on Alshon Jeffrey and where he's training?
Yeah, so obviously he's not here now. This is voluntary, as you guys know. He's in Florida, training in Florida, and we've been in communication with him, but he's in Florida now, training down there. And in a perfect world, would we like him to be here with his teammates and building those relationships? Sure, but I also understand it's voluntary, and that's the action he's chosen to take.
Does he have a plan that you guys have given him when it comes to conditioning, or is he on his own?
Yeah, we're working kind of together on that. He's communicating with the plan that he's doing and stressing how hard he's working and some of the biomechanical things that he's doing, talking to him and his agents. I think they understand the importance, as we do, is him having a healthy season, and I know that's at the front of his mind.
What are your expectations for him in terms of when he will come and participate? Obviously, the mandatory thing is minicamp, but do you expect him at any other time?
Yeah, you know, he signed his franchise tender, so you know, we expect him to be here for the mandatory items, and it's kind of a day to day talk as we discuss things with him and his agent. So, but right now, hey, it's voluntary and it's kind of his personal choice.
Are you still working toward a multi-year contract with him?
We continue to talk, you know, and with his agency. And it's still, like I said before, it's still been cordial and it's been productive, but not a lot of new information there.
So
So do you view his choice to stay in Florida as a negotiating ploy?
I think a lot of these franchise players haven't reported to their teams, you know, so I don't know. I don't know how I view it. I mean, I wish he was here, but it's voluntary, so it kind of is what it is.
Brian, when you're trying to go through the scouting process and be as thorough as possible, what's the key? How do you dispatch the right people? What do you have them looking for to get those second, third, and fourth opinions?
I think the key is just building a strong, good staff, you know, so and just having confidence in those guys and empowering those guys. So we always talk about passion. I can tell when guys are passionate about certain players at different points in the rounds. And, you know, you're never going to have a complete consensus on a player, especially when you got 10 reports. But you can feel it out, you know. And I like having a clear vision where how this player is going to come in here and improve our team. And then if you couple that with the physical activity that he shows, with all the Bears traits that we're looking for, all the intangibles we're looking for, you know, competitive, tough, passionate, football intelligence, those things all kind of lock in together, and it makes a clear decision for us.
You said, Ryan, that with 9 picks, it gives you a lot of flexibility in the draft. But do you have to guard against maybe being too aggressive, like moving up or down, and still being in position to get that best player available?
Yeah, I mean, it does. I mean, it's good this year. Compared to last year, just 6 picks, 9 picks this year. You have more ammunition to move around, and that's good if you feel good about a player you want to go get. But I also think we have a lot of needs. So, and again, I have a lot of confidence in our scouts. So having 9 picks is attractive because it's just more swings, you know.
So Ryan, I know you go through 100 scenarios, thousands is how they fall, but do you guys actually practice the draft? Do you have a practice like drill? Or when are they trained? Around the clock? This is who does this, this is who does
mm-hmm.
this.
We're kind of in that process now. So I'd say the last 2 days of us just been kind of sitting in the office and, you know, going over those different scenarios, which is always entertaining, and somebody will try to throw a curveball in there, and we give them a hard time.
Are there different people in the room assigned to maybe be in contact with different teams, things like that, or do you have one structure to work through?
As far as just communicating
with, make a trade, let's
say. Yeah. So leading into the draft, I'll be the one kind of talking to other teams about different scenarios. But once we're in the draft, we assign one scout, kind of AFC teams, one scout NFC teams, and then one guy kind of coordinating all that, and then they're right behind me and Josh, kind of voicing different scenarios.
When you're considering an offer from another team that's calling you while they're on the clock or you're on the clock, what factors you consider and use that point chart that a lot of teams mm-hmm. talk about? And I know there's different charts.
Yeah.
So what, you know, what happens if they're on a different chart? How does that all work?
Yeah, we have these point, now there's like 4 charts or whatever. So you got this Excel sheet in front of you, and Joey's done a good job kind of simplifying it down and made it clean where you can quickly look, you know, from a point perspective, is this good, bad, fair, you know, and sometimes it just depends on the position, you know, it's all like market value. So sometimes the points don't equal correctly, but if you really want to get a guy or a guy really wants to come up to your spot, you got to look at it, you know. So, but we have all those point charts kind of all together in front of us.
What do you think of the 2 big trades then up at top? Was just bold moves to begin with?
Yeah, you know, nothing surprises me anymore. I think those organizations obviously had a lot of conviction on those players and obviously feel like they'll take them to new heights. So, you know, I respect, you know, the aggressiveness. So
this year versus last year, what's been the biggest difference for you pre-draft process of having your hand-picked guys in, of having familiarity with the roster? How much different has these few months been?
It's just good. It's just calmer, you know what I mean? Like last year, you're getting familiar with new faces and you're getting familiar how to get around this building, you know. And now just not only having – our staff all intact, but kind of knowing everybody's personalities and our coaches too. And, you know, hey, I really like the way this scout talks about receivers. You know, he's really good at receiver. I really like the way this coach communicates about players, and just having a feel for your staff and their personalities.
Ryan, you put together a strong scouting team in place. How do you describe that level of trust you have with them? And when they come back to you saying, I love this guy, this is something we should be looking at, how do you explain just what that means to you and hear from them?
It's huge. You know, it just gives you confidence, and it just makes you sleep a little bit better at night. And I know not only their skill set, you know, and this is, it's a talent, but the work they put into it, man, it's a grind, you know. And, you know, obviously I just got to deal with their wives when they haven't seen them. But it's been good, man. I can't thank them enough in the sacrifices that they've made in this preparation, because it's a grind, and they understand the importance of it, though. I mean, this is the lifeblood of the organization, and everybody understands what's at stake and how important these drafts are.
So is the board set? How much change do you think you'd make in the next
It's set right now. So now it's just going over different scenarios.
Yeah. Ryan, when you said you mentioned you have more than 11 names, is that a message that you're sending that operators are standing by for calls?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If it falls out a certain way, Moon, we have enough names where we feel comfortable. If we had to go back, we could still go back and get a good player.
So how far back?
I'll tell you after the draft.
Can you speak in general terms what you think of the quarterback class and the depth and how far you go to get somebody that you might be able to trust and develop?
It's a solid quarterback. It really is a good class of quarterbacks. And they're all unique, and they're all kind of are a little different. And I think some guys are going to have different perspectives of different flavors, you know. But it's a good class. And then I think there's – And then it breaks after a certain point. And then there's some middle round guys that are intriguing, you know, for different reasons. So it's just up to us to analyze that and rank that correctly. And I think we have.
Perception has been over the years that drafting a running back in the first round is maybe fool's errand. You wouldn't want to do that. How has that changed? What is your general philosophy on that?
It's a good question. I think if you're taking a running back that high, you better have special traits. You better feel that he's going to be a special player. And if he does, then it's worth, you know, making that pick.
A lot of scouts or folks will talk about each draft has 15 blue chippers, 7, 21, whatever. Any sense at the top of the franchise that put blue chip type players, how deep this one is? Is it 8, 11, 15?
We have a sense. We know, we kind of in our mind, we've talked about that. We kind of have that number. I'll tell you in 4 days. So, yeah.
Thanks, everyone.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.